I've got a Chidushi Arim. Okay, now this part, you can probably argue with this little bit of the Svara. It's a little bit of a strange Svara. Chidushi Arim says, if you see someone drowning, what should you do? And he's much bigger than you. A big guy drowning. You're a smaller type guy. What should you do to try to save him? What should you do to try to save him? So, especially if he can't swim very well, or if he can't swim very well, you got to be very careful when you're trying to save him, because if you do the wrong thing, you try grabbing him at a certain point, then he may pull you into the river with him. So the best way, says the Chidushi Arim, to be able to save him, is to not grab him by the arm or part of his body. Just grab him by his hair. Pull him by his hair. And the reason why is because the hair, if the guy starts struggling and tries to get out of it, the hair will pull right out of his body. And that way you won't put yourself in sakana by putting your arm trying to go save him. And the guy himself, you know, he'll realize that he has you by the hair, right, that it's hard for him to get off. It'll be a lot easier that way. That way you won't put yourself in sakana. So that's arguable. I don't know exactly how a person should save another person. I remember when I was in Eretz Yisrael, there was a teul, and there was a huge river right in the middle. The guard that we had, you always hire an armed guard. I remember that armed guard couldn't swim. I remember he jumped into the river, couldn't swim at all, didn't realize how deep it was, and was drowning. So a guy ran in to go save him, and this guy was running around like flailing with a gun, just running back and forth. And this guy was like an expert lifeguard. He went underneath him, put himself underneath him, and floated himself up to the top, was able to get him completely above water. It was an unbelievable feat. I've never seen anything like it. But I still remember, I don't know what the easiest way is to be able to get out, but the point is that when you're trying to save other people, you got to be very careful not to put yourself in danger while doing so, because that's what usually happens. You try to go help somebody, you put yourself in danger by getting to that idea. I guess it's like this. Moshe Rabbeinu had no desire to go to Paro anymore. After the first seven Makos and last week's Parsha, he comes into this week's Parsha and Parsha's bow. He has absolutely no desire to go to Paro. He doesn't want to see him. He doesn't want to have anything to do with him. Going to Paro, all it does, it's like stepping into a pool full of muck, a pool full of garbage. After you come out, you feel absolutely filthy and disgusting afterward. It's like going to a public restroom where you hold your breath the entire time when you're walking in there, and then you go to the washroom, you do what you need to do, wash your hands, and you come out, and you just take that huge, deep breath, you let go of that breath, and you just, oh my gosh. It's one of those situations where, and you never ever touch anything whatsoever with a paper towel or even toilet, you take like a double wrap of toilet paper, you really touch anything. What?
Oh my gosh.
I can tell you. It's Wrigley Field where you have this situation where saw a guy once sitting in the bathroom eating a hot dog in one hand and a beer in the other while in the bathroom. The guy said to him, "What are you doing? Like, what's going on?" He said, "I got no time for this." Yeah, Wrigley Field, the pride and joy of Chicago, at the troughs. Absolutely disgusting. Anything like that, you don't put yourself in it, you feel absolutely disgusting. After seeing such a thing, you just realize like how disgusting that is. That's what it was like going to Paro. You came out from Paro, you were affected. There was no way that you could go in and not feel a little bit of tuma, a little bit of choshech, a little bit of darkness, and feel like you came out a little bit worse off than when you went in. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, "Vayom Hashem El Moshe, Bo El Paro." I want you not only to go to Paro, not only Lech El Paro, Bo El Paro, I want you to come to Paro. I want you to come to Paro. I want you to see what Paro has. I want you to see, and I want you to come and learn something from him. Now, what does this mean? Well, how can Moshe go to Paro and be unaffected? How is it possible for Paro to be able for him not to be affected by it? The Baal Shem Tov is a crazy mushel. He says, like somebody who cleans up the bathroom. If you clean up the bathroom, you're going to smell afterward. There's no question you're going to smell afterward. There's no way to get around that. The Ben Yishai is a mushel. I love this mushel. Two guys were hired to clean out the bathrooms, you know, what they used to use back then, these like holes in the ground that they had in their backyards. Two guys used to be hired, you know, once in a while to clean it up when it overflowed. So the two guys would go, and that was their job. It was a disgusting job, but somebody had to get involved in this. They went back, and they took out all the muck, and they put it in a big bag, and they kept putting it out, and all day long they spent their time in there. Then it was time for lunch. Took off their gloves, took off like their outer clothing, or whatever it is, took off everything, and they went, you know, to go eat their lunch. So one guy sat in a certain corner, so the other guy went right by him to go eat lunch with him. So the first guy gets up, and he walks to another corner. Second guy gets up, he's like, "What is this?" And he goes to the corner with that guy. The guy gets up again, and he tries to walk away. So the second guy looks at him and says, "What are you walking away from? It's not like I don't smell any worse than you do. We both smell. We both have been dealing with the same garbage all day long. Why are you walking away from me?" So the first guy said, "What? I know that I smell. What? I have to double up the smell? Like, I have to do it. I have to do it two times as much. I have to sit with you sitting next to me the entire time. Like, there's no reason for me to have to do such a thing. How was this going to happen? Someone just told me couldn't figure it out after seven makos. Is it worth even going to such a person? So Kadosh Baruch Hu said the following. Bo'el Paro, go to Paro. Because I hardened his heart and the heart of his servants, Manshisio Sayila Bekirbo. Said I give all these signs inside his midst, in his midst. Said he realizes what I've been doing to him. Hold on a second. Go to Paro because I hardened his heart? That's not the reason why you go to Paro. He's going to Paro to do what? To ask for Bnei Yisrael to be freed, right? Go to Paro to ask for Bnei Yisrael to be freed. Because I hardened his heart? That's the reason why not to go. Don't go to Paro because I hardened his heart anyway, so you're not going to gain anything from it. So why bother going to Paro? That would be the reason why. Kia ni echvadeti eslibo is the reason why you shouldn't go to Paro, not a reason to go. So let's chat, this is the reason why you should go, because you have to realize something. This is what the Chiddush HaRim is trying to say. This is God's answer. Everything stems from me. Good things and bad things, light and dark, everything comes from me. I am with them, says the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Even in the darkest hole, even in the most tummy dick of people, the worst people that are out there in the world, the worst people that you could ever imagine, even those people, I am with them. I am somehow involved in them in some way, shape, or form. I created this Choshech, says the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Not directly, I allowed it to be here. Once you start realizing that God is behind the Choshech, that God is behind the decisions that people make, whether it's for good or bad, that God is there, you can go into Rishayim. You can see what Rishayim do, you can hear what they say, and be unaffected by it. Because you realize, there's still a Kadosh Baruch Hu here. There's still something going on. Call it being Dan Lechav Schus. Call it, I don't know, looking at the person and seeing only the Tzelem Elokim, the image of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. But the job that Moshe Rabbeinu had was an impossible job. Go to Paro, a man who's seen seven Makos, and still doesn't want Bnei Yisrael to go. Go with him and find me. Find where I am, says the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Look where I am. Find him within the biggest Russia, the worst, most evil Russia in the world.
Why did God have to come most that he hardened his heart?
Oh, very, very good. That's the whole point. Go to Paro. What's the point? He's not going to listen anyway. Ki ani echbadeti eslibo, because I'm there. And if you look more for me, you'll find me. And in some way, shape, or form, this will cause erosion. Some type of an indentation in Paro's heart. Maybe you won't feel it now. Maybe you won't feel it at Kriyas Yamsu, but eventually you'll feel it and it'll be in Ninveh. Sometime later on he's going to feel something. That's the idea. There's no time, that there's nothing that doesn't affect a person in some way, shape, or form. There's a famous mice, and I'm trying to think of the names. I don't remember exactly who it was. I know it was with the Kufsker. I don't remember who the other person was. We said, who is the worst person in your town? Who is the most evil person in your town? And the guy said to him, the Rebbe said to him, this is before he was a Rebbe, but he said when he was a Talmud, he said, oh, this tax collector. Tax collector is the worst person in my town. I mean, he's just a terrible person. Absolutely terrible person. He doesn't do anything good. Doesn't do anything good. So he said, oh, it's Rav Zusha Manipoli, it's Rav Zusha. How can I forget Rav Zusha? So the Rebbe of Rav Zusha, I forgot who it was, but the Rebbe of Rav Zusha said to Rav Zusha, who's the worst person in your town? So Rav Zusha said, he looked at him and he said, the tax collector, he's a terrible guy. I hate the tax collector. Everybody hates the tax collector. He's a liar, he's a thief, he sends Jews to jail, he tells them he's a talebearer, he's a terrible, terrible person. Nobody likes the tax collector. So the Rebbe looked down and he shook his head. Rebbe shook his head. That's not it. Rav Zusha realized he did wrong. He went away for a couple hours. He's whatever thought about it. Came back. And the person, the Rebbe said to him again, Zusha, who is the most despicable person in your town? And Rav Zusha said to him, Zusha is. I'm the most despicable person in that town. And the Rebbe said to him, now I see that you're my Zusha. Now you're my Zusha. Now we can learn. Now we can go ahead and learn. They asked the question. They said, okay, you know what your Rebbe wanted, right? Why did it take you a couple hours to figure that out? I took you a couple of, what did he want? Well, oh, he probably meant me. he meant that I should stop having such a guy. I should really, like, knock myself down. And he went back and he said that. What made him do that? The shot is that he mamish didn't believe it. He knew that he wasn't such a good person, but Imamish thought that the tax collector was a worse person than him. The Rebbe was trying to teach him, even with Zusha Manipoli, listen, I know that guy's a bad guy. Try to find something good about him. Try to find something better than you about that guy. Look at that guy and see if you can find God, a little bit of a Kadosh Baruch Hu within him. Can you find something good about him? Can you possibly find anything good about that guy? So Zusha went back, and he looked, and he looked, and looked, and looked, and he searched himself, and he realized there were some things that this tax collector does. He goes to shul. He davens pretty well when he goes to shul. He does this, he does that. Who knows what it was? So Reb Zusha went back, and he said, you know what, even that guy's good, but me, I'm a terrible person, because there are things that I do that are absolutely not right. To the point where you say to yourself that Kaddish Baruch Hu is everywhere, even in the biggest Rishayim, and that's the idea behind it. That's the way to go and find Kedusha and be unaffected by the Kedusha that's out there. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu meant when Paro said to him the last time, I don't want to see your face again. I don't want to see your face ever again. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, Kein Dibarta. That's what you said. Lo Sif Od Rose Penach. I am never going to see your face ever again, says Moshe Rabbeinu. I'm not going to come see you ever again. The idea is that it's the end of everything. I don't need to see you anymore. I've seen all the Kedusha that I needed to see out of you. I've taken out everything that I needed to know. I've seen a Kadosh Baruch within you, Paro. I've seen where God is. I was able to get a Nevuah in your palace, with all of your Avodah Zarah, with all of your Tumah, with everything there. As soon as he spoke to him about Choshech, at that moment, HaKadosh Baruch Hu came to him in a vision and said, there's going to be Makas Bechoros. In Paro's palace, somehow he got a Nevuah in the greatest dawn of Tumah. How do you get Nevuah in the middle of Tumah? The answer is, if you see the good even in the Tumah people, if you can find the Kedusha even in Paro, you can do anything you want. Anything. You look around for Kedusha and you eventually find it, you can do whatever you want, and that's what Moshe Rabbeinu was able to do. So the next time you see a guy in the street and you say, that guy's such a Rasha. Next time you see a guy you don't watch TV, obviously, but if you ever hear of a guy in the news, or you see a picture on the newspaper, and you see this guy and you look at him, like, oh, what a Rasha, I can't believe it. Try to find the little bit, the tiny little bit that he has. He's still a Tzelem Elokim. That was the lesson, that was the message that Moshe Rabbeinu got from the beginning of the Parsha according to the Kedusha Rim. Crazy, crazy message. You ever tried trying to find something good about Jeffrey Dahmer? Trying to find something good about Manson? About any of these people? Can you imagine trying to find it? Let me say they have a Tzelem Elokim. They look like a human being. They still somewhat look like a human being. Try to find something good about Hitler, Yimach Shalom.
What? He's a great speaker.
Like, how do you do such a thing? I'm sorry? Great speaker. Well, great orator. There we go. Had the ability to convince everyone. You know, Rabbonim Yipshischa. I got into this Chassid Shasar. I'm really sorry. Rabbonim Yipshischa. He has a crazy chiddush, unbelievable chiddush. If you notice, in the beginning of the parsha, nowhere does it mention, does a Kadosh Baruch Hu say to Moshe Rabbeinu what makkah to give as number 8. He doesn't tell him what to do for number 8. He just says, Bo'al Paro, etc. Shisios Asai Yelam Bekirbo, so I give the rest of my signs to him. Doesn't say what the makkah is. It's that you tell it over to your children and your grandchildren, the fact that I made fun of Mitzrayim, and all the signs that I give, and you all know that I am God. So Moshe and Aaron come up to Paro, says, send out Bnei Yisrael. If you don't, hinini mevim achor arbe bigbulech. I'm going to send locusts in your midst. So where did he get the concept of locusts from? Says Rabbonim Yipshischa. It's crazy. Moshe Rabbeinu made it up. Moshe Rabbeinu was allowed to make up one makkah. He got his own. It was like your own, whatever you want, Moshe. You choose one. So he blew his wish on locusts. He got it on locusts. There's definitely Mita Kenaganita. Definitely that. But we have to understand something here. Granted, there's got to be a remez. I mean, even according to Rabbonim Yipshischa, the mate that he had, the staff, said, Ditzach Adash Biachav, there was an aleph there. There already was an aleph, so he was 21 letters down. I mean, he had to have something that started with an aleph in order for this makkah to go. He knew it had to be an aleph. And there's even a remez. Bo El Paro, you know, there are letters that get interchanged. Letters that are said from the throat, aleph, ches, hey, and ayin, can all be interchanged with one another, and with your lips, beis, vav, mem, pei. It's called achea bunt gichak daltenat, zashas rat. Those are the ones that are all together that connect with one another. But beis, vav, mem, and pei can be switched around with one another. So in Tzitzit Shimshon says, the Chassam Sofer explains it, but bo el paro, if you take the pei, and you turn it into a beis, and you take out the ayin, and you turn it into an aleph, then paro becomes beis resh aleph hey. And if you switch them around, that becomes arbe. So you take bo, you put it into paro, you end up getting arbe. Okay, granted, that's a remez. Okay, that's there. But that doesn't tell you that he knew about arbe. I mean, where did he get that from? So I thought the following, like this. Paro thought at first that Moshe Rabbeinu was a machashin, that he was a magician, he was doing crazy things. In the end, everybody knew he could not be a magician. There was no way he was a magician. Every mock up until now had a ridiculous component to it. There was something ridiculous about every makkah. Dam is absolutely impossible. There's no way you can turn, in a natural way, to turn water into blood. It's not going to happen. Svardaya, there's no way that one frog can call out or be hit and turn into a bunch of frogs. No way it can happen. Kinim, there's no way ground can turn into ice. Arov, there's no way animals, wild animals, can work together to kill the Mitzrayim. That's what Arov is, a mixture of the wild animals. Dever, the fact that there was such a plague that wiped out every one of their domestic animals, not just cows, like mad cow disease, or a sheep disease, or anything like that, to wipe out all five types of the domestic animals that they had, it's ridiculous to think such a thing, and literally 90% of their animals died, according to Sefer Yashar. That's a crazy amount. Shchin, I mean the boils, the one their skin. It was wet on the inside and dry on the outside. It was a supernatural type of boil. There was no way to heal it. The Gemara Bava Kama says that in Samach Aleph from Samach on Beis. That's Shchin. Barad, it was clearly supernatural. With snow and fire together, my father told me over Shabbos this past week. The Miyam Lois brings down that the Barad was from outer space. From outer space. So they say that was meteors. Meteors are freezing cold pieces of ice that go through the atmosphere and are fiery. That would be the connection between the ice and the fire. I don't know. I have absolutely no idea. Makes a lot of sense because some of the Barad is still up there. That would be the asteroid belt that's still waiting up there, waiting to come down and hit at the end of times, by the times of Gog and Magog, when the last part of Barad comes
in. When it hit down, it would affect a larger...
It would try to go around, yeah.
It would affect a larger... Yeah.
It would have to be... Maybe there were smaller meteors. I have absolutely no idea. It's just a very cold... Listen, it's just...
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it would have to be something very, very interesting.
Doesn't it chase people, too?
Who knows? Yeah, it was supposed to be heat-seeking missiles that went around by people. These things are supernatural.
Carl thought that Moshe was a magician.
Yeah, at first, yeah.
After that, why did he kill him? Or try to kill him.
I think that was it. They tried killing him. There's a shot in that. Why didn't they kill Paro? Why didn't they kill Moshe Rabbeinu? Get that. You know what? Lean out there. I'll try to look it up tonight. I remember seeing that like last year. It was a question asked by one of the. It was either Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky or somebody else. Somebody asked that. Yeah, 100%. Why wouldn't you kill Moshe? I don't remember who asked it. It's a good question. I don't remember who asked it, but it's answered. I remember it being a good answer. Might have been the Meshech Chochma. Lean out. I'll try to get back to that. I can't remember offhand. Either way, regardless, obviously, Choshech is ridiculous. The darkness that they couldn't move, ridiculous. Makis Bechor said all the Bechor died. All these things are supernatural. The only thing that technically was not supernatural was Arbeth. It was a natural plague. The fact that locusts swarmed all over Mitzrayim. Now, granted, the Kliyakar says they were all blind. And there's another parish that says they were all males. There's another parish that says it was only one type of locust. And there's another parish that says that it covered up the entire land and there was not one space of Mitzrayim that didn't have Arba in it. I realize that. But regardless, it was something... A locust swarm is natural. Maybe the Peshati is Laman Tisaper Ba'aznei Bincho Ben Bincho. This is a makkah that you should tell over to your children. He gave it over to Moshe and said, make it natural. Don't make it be something supernatural. Do something natural to knock down the Mitzrayim so that the people know that I am not just a God that does miracles, that deals with the supernatural, with the crazy stuff, and does unbelievable stuff. No, I deal with the natural things as well. I can make a locust swarm. I can destroy all Mitzrayim with a locust swarm. You pick something, Moshe, but it's something that's going to be a natural plague that's going to affect Mitzrayim that everybody will look at and they'll say, oh, now we understand. And not only that, I think there's another lesson over here. That not only when God says something, that it happens. When a Talmid Chacham says something, a Talmid Chacham has the ability and the power. You should tell your children and your grandchildren that a Talmid Chacham can do anything in the world. He can even make up a makkah against the Mitzrayim and God will listen to him. That's the ability that Moshe Rabbeinu had. Who knows? But that could be the idea of what Rabbanim Mipshitzka is saying, that was the Chiddush of Makkah Tarba. What was going on over here? Okay. Choshech. Rabbi Yashav asked, what's the point of punishing Mitzrayim with Choshech? Every other makkah affected the Mitzrayim in the fact that they saw that they were plagued and the Jews were unaffected. Dam, the Jews were clearly drinking out of water. Tzvardeya, the Tzvardeya didn't hit the Jews. Everything, every single makkah was hit the Mitzrayim and did not hit the Jews. They could see, oh, the Jews are unaffected. Choshech, not only could they not see the Jews, but it did affect the Jews. 4/5 of the Jews died. This makkah of Choshech destroyed more Jews in that makkah than any of the Mitzrayim in the first 9 makkahs. Can you believe that? Because 4/5 of Mitzrayim didn't die during the first 9 makkahs. This makkah destroyed more Jews. What is the point of makkah's Choshech? What was the idea? What were they trying to see? Plus, why were the Jews killed? The 4/5 of the Jews? Such power. Mom, it's an unbelievable thing to say. 15 million Jews in Mitzrayim. 3 million Jews left. 12 million Jews died in Choshech. That's double the Holocaust. Double the Holocaust. And nobody's thinking, it's not even spoken about. 12 million Jews died. That's a power. It's an absolute beyond a wonder that 4/5 of the Jews died. Bruce Schwab has a whole piece that's not exactly 4/5. It was still a lot of Jews, but it wasn't 4/5 of the Jews. But it's a crazy number. Why in the world was Choshech given? What was the point of this makkah? There's a medrash. When Moshe and Aaron first came to Mitzrayim, they went into the palace of Mitzrayim, and the door that was very, very low, because remember, Paro was only 1.5 feet tall, the door was very, very low. It raised up so that Moshe Rabbeinu, who was 10 amos tall, 15 feet tall, however possible that is, Moshe Rabbeinu was able to walk in straight up into the room. The kings were there. It was Paro's birthday. Happy birthday, Paro. On that day, all the kings had come from Canaan, and they brought him crowns of all these jewels and gold and everything. They brought him crowns, and they'd put it down on a table. When they saw Moshe Rabbeinu walk in, they looked up. They saw the stature of Moshe Rabbeinu. They took their crowns, and they threw it on Moshe Rabbeinu's head. And Moshe Rabbeinu was wearing all the crowns of the 31 kings of Eretz Canaan. That's what the Medrash says. Paro was so frightened by the appearance of Moshe Rabbeinu that he had to go to the bathroom. Now, how did Paro usually go to the bathroom? He went to the Nile River in the morning, right? He had a private bathroom right behind his throne, just in case he had to go in the middle of the day. But nobody knew about it. He went to the bathroom. That's the famous thing that the rats bit him while he was in the bathroom, and he screamed, and he ran out of the bathroom, and everybody saw him going to the washroom with the rats on him, and that's how they knew that he wasn't really a god. The people that were there knew that they weren't a god. It's an unbelievable medrash. Unbelievable medrash. But the medrash goes on and says, who is your god? Who is your god?
Can you imagine a 1.5-foot guy running out of the bathroom with a rat that's like attached to him?
If the rat is the same size, like 1.5. And then, Mi Hashem Asher Eshma Vekolo. That's what Paro said. Who is God that I should listen to his voice? What he asked really is the following. He said, and this is what the medrash says. He asked, is God young or is God old? Is he a short god? Is he a tall god? How old is he? How many cities and countries has he captured? That was the questions he asked about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, Kohu Gvuraso Malei Olam. His koach and his strength fills up the entire world. He's asking physical questions. And Moshe Rabbeinu answers them honestly. He has no sheikhist of the physical. God is not physical, he's Rukhni. He's purely spiritual. None of these concepts mean anything to God. He has nothing to do with physical components. There's nothing there. And Paro didn't understand it. Paro looked at Moshe Rabbeinu and said, how can you believe in a God that you can't see? How can you believe in a God that's not right there in front of you? And really, I mean, that applies by almost every religion that's out today. Most of the people in the world, maybe the Muslims are different, most of the people in the world only believe in a God if there's something there in front of you. And Yashka was a human being that was there in front of them, that was the representation of God. The idea of an idol being in front of you, or some six-armed elephant, something being in front of you. There's something there for you to worship, but if he's not there, if you can't see him, there's no God. God isn't there. And now comes Makas Choshech. So it got dark outside, right? So what do you do if it gets dark outside? Go to sleep. This is so bad. Paro's like, oh, this is the easiest makkah we've had so far. Paro goes to sleep. His old people, the whole country goes to sleep. It's just a dark day. That's fine. They all went to sleep. But how long can you sleep for? After 20 hours, they started getting hungry. Everybody started getting hungry. So they get up and they can't feel anything. They're like, when is this darkness ending? So they're walking around the palace, and they can't see anything for the last 3 days. For the first 3 days, they could still move. They're going around and they can't feel, they can get around the walls, but they can't find the kitchen. There's a Jew that's standing around there. A Jew is walking around and he sees all these people, because you're able to see perfectly fine. He sees all these people like walking around in the dark as if they're all blind. See all these people like that. And he goes up to Paro. The Jew goes up to Paro and says, Adoni HaMelech, my master the king, tell me, what do you need? What's going on? He said, I can't see anything. I think I might have gone blind. I don't get this. There's darkness all around me. So the Jew says, do you need any help? King says, yes, please help me. He gives him food. He gives him drink. He sits him down at a table. He gives him whatever he needs. During that makkah, Yalkut Shimoni says the Jews became rich, not only because they went around looking for the riches of the Mitzrayim and found them in little treasure and whatever it is. The Mitzrayim paid them to help them out, to get them food, to make them sitting down in the right seat, to make sure they would know where they were going. That's what ended up happening. They became rich, Yalkut Shimoni in Kuf Pei Vav. says Rav Yashiv, then the last 3 days came, and they weren't able to move. Why weren't they able to move? I saw this in Miham Loiz before. I never knew it was a Medrash. Medrash Rabbah says, it was a Choshech of Gehenim. You know what Choshech in Gehenim is like? Choshech in Gehenim is not just a darkness. It's a darkness that's palpable, that's so palpable that you feel like there's visions right across from you. Nowadays, with videos, with these types of things, you can feel this. It's like a hologram image in front of you of the scariest things you could ever imagine. Of Malachi Chavala, of Shadim, demons that are all around you at all times. The darkness that they had in Mitzrayim for the last 3 days showed them all the demons that surrounded them at all times. All the demons that were everywhere around them. That's what they saw. They saw strange creatures, dragons, all these crazy things right by them. These crazy, crazy creatures. They were scared out of their mind. Scared out of their mind. Everybody's seen Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory? The original one?
Yeah.
Remember the tunnel?
Yeah.
What in the world is the point of that tunnel? He made a tunnel that had those scary pictures on the side, like the eyeball and the guy chopping off the head of a chicken. And they go through the tunnel. Go through the tunnel in order to get to the rest of the chocolate factory. They crazy concept. Okay. Somebody was on heavy, heavy acid when they wrote that script. Regardless, that's what it was like. The Choshech was the point of where you were so scared from everything you were seeing around you. You were so freaked out, you couldn't move. You were so scared, you just stopped and you trembled. And they couldn't do anything for 3 days. The Mitzrayim were unbelievably scared to the point where they could not move. Brachos, Vavam et Aleph, El Mole Nitna Rishus La'ayin Liros, if your eye was given permission to see, Ein Kol Bria Yechola Lamod Mirei Mazikin, no creature would be able to stand because you'd see all the demons around you. The amount of demons that there are in this world that are right there in front of you, and you can't see them. It's crazy. If you would be able to see them, you die out of fear. That's what the Mitzrayim were able to see. For 3 days, they saw the world as it would be if you could see everything around you. Then they realized that Moshe Rabbeinu was right. It doesn't matter that you don't see a God. God can exist even if you don't see Him. Because when they saw what the Choshech did to them, when they saw what happened, they understood the concept of there being a God that one can't see in this world. That was the last makkah that affected all of the Mitzrayim. Makkah's Bechoros obviously was a different story altogether. But the last makkah to affect every Mitzrayim without killing them, without knocking them out, was a makkah that made them understand there is a God. There most definitely is a God. And it led right into Makkah's Bechoros the very next night, according to the Ramban. The very next night was Makkah's Bechoros. There is nothing like Makkah's Choshech. And that also taught the Jews. The Jews didn't want to leave. Four-fifths of the Jews didn't want to leave. That's what Makkah's Choshech did to them. When they saw it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed them to see what was around them, to realize that they didn't, that just the fact that you can't see God means nothing. The fact that you can't touch God, that's nothing. God is still there anyway. When the Jews realized that, they died immediately out of embarrassment. That's what happened to those four-fifths of Bnei Yisrael. They died out of busha, that they weren't able to take it, that they didn't realize that God was right there the entire time. And it was a gift that they died, because they didn't have to see those crazy, crazy things. Okay, Sfas Emes. What is the point of Sifur Yetzias Mitzrayim? Why do we do it, and what is the point of telling it over and to tell everybody about what happened? Shem could have just said to us, here's the Torah. We didn't have to go down to Mitzrayim, become slaves for 210 years, granted only 86 of them were slavery, and then get out and have Gulas Mitzrayim and praise God. I mean, don't send us down in the first place, and then we don't need a Gula. Why did God send us down to Mitzrayim? At the end, you know how it says that Oz Yashir, they looked up and they saw the entire plan, and they looked at God and they're like, oh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, thank you so much. We need thank you so much. Why did you bring us into Gulas in the first place? Why did you make me a slave in the first place? How is that explained? If I was there, I would have been upset. I would have looked at God and I would have said, like, listen, I hear you. Thank you. I appreciate the Makos. I appreciate Kriyas Yamsuf. That was really crazy. It was really, really crazy. You couldn't have done that without setting us down in the first place? Without Mitzrayim in the first place? What was the point of Mitzrayim in the first place? Sasama says an unbelievable line. Unbelievable line. His answer is, no matter what happens, one always should thank God for Gulas. Thank God for the fact that we have Gulas. Why? Pshat is like this. Once you have a Gulas, and once there's a point to an exile, something like that, you have an opportunity to get closer to God. Because sometimes, when you're eating all the fattened foods that you could possibly want, you're drinking everything you could possibly need, and you have the basic mikdash right in front of you, you take advantage of the situation, and you say, yeah, there's a God. Right now I have a taiva. Right now I'm in the mood for something. Gullus is an opportunity, and this is the idea behind it. This is why HaKadosh Baruch Hu does it in the first place, says the Sfas Emes, to be able to accept the tov of HaKadosh Baruch Hu by understanding and knowing that sometimes, the only way you appreciate the good is if you have bad. If there would be no such thing as bad, the good wouldn't feel like anything at all. And you wouldn't be able to appreciate the good. You wouldn't be able to feel that good. It wouldn't mean anything to you. You wouldn't feel anything. The true purpose of anything bad that happens to a person, of tzaros and yisurin, of those types of ideas and what's there, is to knock you down a little bit. To knock you down. To get rid of your gaiva, and to make you understand there are good things in this world. Learn to appreciate them. Learn to appreciate the fact, and I've said this before, but it's just an obvious line. Learn to appreciate the fact that when you wake up in the morning and you don't have any issues, you wake up and you're able to stretch, and you're able to move your limbs, and you can see, and you can swallow, and you can do everything, say, thank God, I have the ability to do that. That's the point of Birkas HaShachar. You're not guaranteed to wake up in the morning. If you ever want to see somebody who's appreciative, the fact that he wakes up in the morning, find somebody who's had Bell's palsy, who wakes up in the morning, and all of a sudden he's paralyzed in half of his body. That person appreciates the fact that one day he wakes up and he's not like that. Because one day you could wake up and you can't do it. When my wife had torticollis, remember the whole story where I hit my head in the back of the wall, went to the hospital, okay, crazy story, regardless. My wife woke up in the morning, she couldn't move her neck, regular bed. She went to bed, she went to sleep, she must have been in a strange position in the middle of the night, she like moved her head around in some way, she woke up in the morning, couldn't move her neck, couldn't move anything. She couldn't move anything. Every time she moved her neck even a little bit, she threw up. Out of the pain that it took to be able to do it. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. Because the fact is that we never, ever appreciate HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the good that He's given us until we get a little bit of tzara. Then all of a sudden you start to see the good. And that's the point of the Gullus. You want Gullus Mitzrayim? You want to appreciate the fact that God took us and gave us the Torah? Thank you, God. He gave me 613 things to do every day. I really appreciate that. Well, if you're a slave first, you realize the greatness of a Geulas Mitzrayim, of what a Kadosh Baruch Hu is when he finally gives something to us, then you realize the Tov of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Then you realize what a Kadosh Baruch Hu can do. It's not a full answer. There's a lot more to it, and I'm skipping out a lot on it. But that's the Sfas Emes' idea. The last thing that we have to know, the last thing we're going to do over here, is Reb Moshe. Reb Moshe says at the very end of the Parsha, and this is random, but at the very end of the Parsha, it's filling. Is put on, the very last pasuk, I should say, is the pasuk, V'hayla osal yodcha. It will be a sign on your hand. U'letotvos beninechon, as it's filling between your eyes, kibachozik yedos yanu Hashem mitzrayim, with a strong hand, with a mighty arm, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took you out of Mitzrayim. Al yodcha is spelled yud dalid chaf he. Not yud dalid chaf, as it should be, yodcha. It's yud dalid chaf he. Why? Says the Medrash, because it's supposed to be on the yad keho. Where do you put your tefillin? Put it on the weaker arm. If you're a righty, you put it on your left arm. If you're a lefty, you put it on your right arm. Why do you put your tefillin on the weaker arm? So Rabbeinu Bachai, we spoke about this before also. Rabbeinu Bachai says the famous answer. Put on tefillin in the morning. Your shel rosh is supposed to pull in shefa from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the good things from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the straps put it down your entire body. Spreads it throughout your entire body. The left strap goes to your heart. The right strap is supposed to go down to the erva. So it's supposed to give you kedusha all throughout your entire body. That's the idea of tefillin. So why do you have the tefillin on the arm? Tefillin on the arm is supposed to make sure that even though you do your mitzvahs, let's say you're a righty, you do all your mitzvahs with your right hand, so your right hand automatically is kadosh, but your left hand feels left out. You never do anything with your left hand. What do you do with your left hand? You never do any mitzvahs with it. So you put your tefillin on your left hand. You spread kedusha throughout the entire arm, so that you're even that weaker arm that never gets to do any mitzvahs, even that will be able to do mitzvahs. That arm will be able to get a mitzvah done with it. That's the idea behind it. Here's what Reb Moshe says. The point behind having it on the weaker arm is because sometimes you don't want to do the mitzvahs. Sometimes you feel weak. Sometimes you're just bored. And you just don't want to do it. It's harder to do. Even at that point, says the Kadosh Baruch Hu, take your tefillin and put it on your weaker arm. And say to yourself, I understand. There are times in this world where you don't want to do anything that a Kadosh Baruch Hu tells you. You don't want to do it. You just feel weak. You just don't want... You're not in the mood. It's just not there. That is the perfect time. Perfect time to put on your tefillin, to do something that's right. Because at that moment, when you feel the weakest, that's when you can feel the closest to a Kaddish Baruch Hu if you do something for him. At that weak, that point of weakness, that point of nothingness, that's a Kaddish Baruch Hu send you another type of a sign. A sign of, do it now. Do it now. Because I'm guaranteeing you, you will find some sort of Hatzlacha. So if you ever feel it, you wake up in the morning, you're like, I don't want to put it on, I don't want to put it on. That's the time to put it on right then. Do it. And put it on that weak arm. That's the idea, that especially, and that thing, if that type of perspective changes your life, the idea of understanding that Ra is really good, the idea of when it's hard, do it anyway, that perspective changes your entire life. I know it's hard. You do it anyway. Yeah.
You know. It makes it seem like any time that you're feeling down, or that you're not feeling into it, you should be putting on the film.
You wish it was this way, but you wish it was the following, that every time you do feel into it, you're doing the mitzvah in the best way possible. That means you're doing it purely l'shem shamayim, because you're really into it. You're saying, like, what am I putting on film, phylacteries and these straps all around my arm? What am I doing that for? Pshat is because the Kaddish Baruch Hu told me to do it. Then you feel like you're into something. When you're not into it, that's when you put them on and you say to yourself, what am I doing? And you'll feel that connection come. You'll feel that little bit of, I pushed, I did what I was supposed to do, and then a siyata d'shmaya will push you back, will make you feel a little bit better. So to go over what we went through, the summary is, number one, Moshe was afraid of being affected by Paro. He was afraid of going to Paro because he was afraid of the tumah of Paro. But he understood that if you look at the kedusha of Paro, then you won't be affected. Number two, Arba was Moshe's chiddush. Arba was Moshe's chiddush. He made it up on his own to show that even natural things belong to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Even nature belongs to God. Number three, the purpose of Makas Choshech, the purpose of the darkness, was to show B'nai Yisrael that you don't need to see God. There is no need to see God. That God is there even if you can't feel Him. Number four, the purpose of Gullus in general is to knock down your Gaiva and to understand that in order for me to appreciate the good, there needs to be a little bit of bad. There needs to be some bad with it. And number five, that's also the point of the tefillin on the weaker arm, to be able to strengthen yourself, to make you feel that even though I feel weak and not into it and I'm not ready for it, I have to do it anyway. And that will automatically give you a little bit of a connection back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you do it even in that crazy situation, you'll feel a little bit better about yourself and life will be a little bit more, you'll feel a bit more appreciative. That's the idea behind it. We'll stop with that. Have a good Shabbos, everybody. Yeah,